This is the second week that we've been talking about Elijah. We're going to hear the text today, first in Karen. For many people, English is their second language. They also have a synopsis of the sermon in written form today.
Maka we Elia win law. Dollar Tani the Paloki, Damatala, Higisa Pomine, a poqua sat away, Dosawe Nanakale, do a thought o leba lapuba, Dopomine Siba so Elia, Tabacadona, Doya Mimnile, Yuapagno, Nehedi notoki yita deba, Domati poqua secoa. Do siweda siba o hiloyan pokwarke do hito wele atana po abu do so to wesu de le takotto pe oso we do palo ole lo mida we ni lo do koto su yua do siweda yua ksa e ne di hese kota ele pomike me lo le yo ole oso do o do mati pokwase ko a Do suta atale pota poko seblo do koto su yua do siweda yua yeksa mo pota ata heke su apurike do yua dogana so Elia kelu do pota ata heke gedake le apu do muto kewelo do so Elia hine pota do so lo ole de busu hibu do hilo wele amo Do so Elia siweda, kwa kwa, napo kwa muwelo. Do pomune sila so Elia, kekne I, yethi nya leta I, lene me yuwa pagnyo. Do le yuwa klini, lene tako, me ato lulo. Mo yuwa suwekita so shwi, so yuwa pomko gaden ke table.
Table. Pom 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 pom. Okay. Mission Impossible. Thank you. Boy, I'm glad somebody recognized it. I was going to be in trouble if they didn't. It was a very popular show when I was young, and now there's a series of movies starring Tom Cruise, and it continues. And it's the amazing thing about it is that it has the same thing happen every time at the beginning. There's a voice. You don't see the person, you just hear the voice, and the agent is given a mission. You're to do this. And always, always there's a line that says, this is your mission, should you decide to accept it. Now the missions that they're given live up to the title of the show, because they seem impossible. They're dangerous. And the voice comes, and the voice goes away. I was thinking about how this describes Elijah as he received his mission impossible. There was a voice. There was a difficult assignment. And then he had the very real choice to decide to take this offer or not, to choose this mission or not. God gave him the message for Ahab, and it was a dangerous mission because he was challenging. He was poking King Ahab right in the chest, saying, what you're doing is bringing disaster upon Israel. This drought that's going to happen for 3 years is because of you and Jezebel, and because you have brought strange gods to Israel, and you have welcomed them, and you have made others worship. Now, Elijah had a choice. Elijah didn't have to take on this mission. Should you decide to accept it, he could have said, no way, Jose. But he didn't. He left the security of Tishbe on the east side of the Jordan and marched right up to Ahab and told him. He could have stayed safe and sound. But he chose to be faithful, and he responded by faith, not fear. He chose to be faithful when it would have been easier to stay at home and play it safe. The next 3 years of his life would be a roller coaster ride, an exciting one at that. Sometimes it had a clear view and beautiful, and then other times just holding on for dear life as you plummet to the earth. Because he chose to accept the mission, he found himself public enemy number one. And he ran away from Ahab to a small river that flowed through the bottom of the valley floor. There was water there, and miraculously God sent ravens to bring him food. But over time he could see that the water was running out, the drought was having its effect. But he would remain faithful because this is what God told him to do. He had gone, he had followed him to Ahab, he had followed him here to this place. He waited. This is what God had told him to do. And he waited for further instructions. But it must have seemed like he was at the end of his rope. Finally, the word came and God spoke to him again. Go to Zarephath. Well, that was 100 miles away. And he just couldn't stick out his thumb or grab a train. He had to walk that way. And he was hungry. He was supposed to go to a foreign woman and who worshipped a foreign god who was starving herself and ask her for food. This didn't sound like a very good plan. She was at the end of her rope too, but God used Elijah and God used her to save each other and the son. The food lasted and lasted. It continued and it kept appearing day by day. It was like manna in the wilderness. To say that God moves in mysterious ways is an understatement if you're Elijah. Elijah's roller coaster ride would continue, not just in today's lesson, but into next week when he takes on all the priests of Baal, and it's an exciting climax to this 3 weeks. And just when you think about everything that could go wrong, already did, there's another challenge to his faith. 1 Kings 17, verses 17 to 24. Sometime later, the widow's son got sick. He got worse, and he got worse, and he finally died. She said to Elijah, "Man of God, why did you come? Why did you do this to me? Did you come here to remind me and God of my sins and so caused my son's death?" "Give the boy to me," Elijah said. He took the boy from her arms, carried him upstairs to the room where he had been staying, and he laid him on the bed, and there he prayed aloud, "Oh Lord, my God, why have you done such a terrible thing to this widow? She has been kind enough to take care of me, and now you kill her son." Then Elijah stretched himself out on the boy, and 3 times he prayed, "O Lord, restore this child to life." And the Lord answered Elijah's prayer, and the child started breathing again and was revived. Elijah took the boy back downstairs to his mother and said to her, "Look, your son is alive." She answered, "Now I know that you are a man of God and that the Lord really does speak through you." May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. "What on earth did I do to deserve this?" the widow asked. She blames Elijah for her sorrow. "What do you have against me, O man of God, that you came here to remind me and God of my sins?" When bad things happen to human beings, we have this tendency to find something or someone else to blame. In her grief, the widow blamed Elijah. And then she blamed herself for the death of her son. As if she hadn't suffered enough, the death of her husband, the near starvation, and now the death of her child. Elijah took the child from her trembling arms and carried him upstairs to the room where he slept. And as the widow had put the blame on Elijah for the death of this child, now Elijah blames God. Elijah blamed God, "Why did you do such a terrible thing to this woman who has only been my salvation?" Without God's intervention through Elijah, of course, the boy would have died long ago from starvation. And perhaps this is why Elijah's complaint before God is so poignant. Why'd you save the boy only to have him die and break his mother's heart? Elijah had come to the end of his rope again. He had trusted God and was obedient through many dangers, toils, and snares. But it looked like death had won. It would be easy to be fearful and not faithful. And so, in desperation, he lays the boy on the bed and then lays himself over the body of the dead boy. And three times he says, "Let this child's soul come back to him." And God answered. The boy's life returned to him. Elijah learned that the Lord God of Israel was not bound by geography as he had gone back and forth to Ahab. There was no place that God was not. And God was not bound by earthly powers. Elijah had been kept alive and from starvation from Ahab. And now Elijah learned that God was not even bound by death. Week after week, with constant faith, Elijah had watched as the creek had gotten smaller and smaller and dried up. But Elijah still had faith when he was hungry. And when he had to walk 100 miles out of Israel to rely on a foreign woman, he could see God at work in the saving of the son and of himself with food day by day. He refused to not believe in God. He remained faithful, not fearful. Elijah could have looked at what he was facing and given up, thrown up his hands. And I'll tell you, this is the way that our problems often seem to us. They seem close up. If I put my hand in front of my face, I can block you all out just this way. And that's the way that some of our problems seem sometimes. That they are so big because they are so near. And we see all of life through our problems. And somehow God is way out there. And when we do this, we are living in fear. And it is very hard, nearly impossible, to make good decisions from that perspective. What Elijah did, not always, but most of the time, looked through God's open hand and grace to the situations that faced him. And this made all the difference in the world. Because if God was here and what he was facing was out there, he was seeing through that presence of God, through the reminder that God had been present and powerful with him, and that he had been brought safe this far. When the storms of life are raging, stand by me, be here. Let me see through you these things. Don't let these things get so big that I cannot see you. This is what Elijah did. Paul said it well in Corinthians, "We see through the glass darkly, an image in the mirror. What we know now is only in part, and someday it will be complete." The thing that kind of gets me about God is that by the time I get to face God in heaven, it won't matter what these burning questions are that I've had for him all this time. Because I believe that God will prove himself to be worthy of all my trust, of all my faith. God's grace is experienced often through trials and loss. So often we'd like to think that we are in control of our lives. It feels good. And then the rug gets pulled out from underneath us. And we realize that, no. There are so many things in life that are beyond our control. And so it's going to depend on how we view our lives. Are we viewing them through our fears? Are we viewing them through our troubles and seeing God out in the distance somewhere? Or is God here? And are God's eyes being used to see what's before us? And that power of God and the way that God has been in the past at work in our lives. It didn't mean that Elijah always understood what was happening to him. He didn't. And it doesn't mean that he never complained before God, because he obviously did. But he understood his problem in relationship to God. How many times had he come to the end of his rope? How many times had that roller coaster taken a dip that he thought he may never return from? So many things happen to us in our lives, good and bad,
and ugly things. There are so many times when it would be easy to give up. It would be easier to see through our fears than through our faith. Elijah, in this coming week, we're going to learn, did not live a perfect life, did not live a perfectly faithful life. He was fearful, and he let those fears drive him at times. But ultimately, he came back to that knowledge that God loved him and that God had called him. And because he had said yes, because he had chosen to accept his mission, his life given to God, that God had provided in a way that was beyond his understanding. For the last 5 years, First Baptist Church has been in a battle with the city. They charge us $18,000 to shovel the snow, and we don't think that's fair. And at first we thought it was unfair, and we tried to make a deal with them, and that didn't work. As we got further along into the case, we realized that it was not only unfair, but it was illegal what they were doing. And so we went to the judge, and the judge sent us to a mediator. The mediator said, nope, this isn't going to work. The city's not going to budge. Go back to the judge. The judge decided against us for the city. We appealed. The appeals court sent it back to the lower court. We lost again at the district court. And we appealed to the appeals court. And we lost there again. I know what Elijah feels like. Here we are. What kind of hope do we have? There was one last thing to do. After all these piles of papers that we had created through our lawyer, now they said, tell you what, in 5 pages, tell us your case, and perhaps the Supreme Court will take your case up. And indeed, that's what happened. 3 of the justices thought our case was worthy of their review, and 2 months ago today, they heard our case. We are waiting their decision. We don't know what will happen. And it has been hard to live in hope when there's so much that's not there. But there are moments, and this is the way that it is in our lives. It is not always clear. In fact, rarely is it clear. But there are moments when we have a word of encouragement, an inspiration, an insight into life that God is present, that God is there, that justice will prevail, whether it's in our lifetime or not. Because I believe that everything is ultimately tipped toward God. So I may as well just get used to that. Hopefully within a month, we'll find out if we'll have to continue to pay the $18,000 a year. But until that time, and regardless of the situation, I'm still going to have faith that justice will prevail. It's amazing. It's amazing. There was a fellow that has supported our case. He's not a member of the church, but he is a member of a group called the Center for the American Experiment. He said, I don't usually talk this way. I'm a churchgoer, but I'm also a lawyer. But it seems like your case with the city is like Moses coming before Pharaoh. And what I mean is that Pharaoh's heart was hardened in order that God's will would be done. Okay, I'm going to take his word for it, seeing as it came from such an odd source. But I believe that the city's heart has been hardened. The bureaucracy has been hardened against us in order that God's will, that God's justice will be shown. I can't prove it. But then there are so few things in life that we can prove. But I believe it. And I'm going to continue to believe. I'm going to continue to walk in faith, believing that God does these amazing things. And there will be times when it doesn't make sense. There will be times when there are troubles that are not our own. There will be times when we experience things that we just shouldn't have to do. You know, no good deed goes unpunished. But the fact is that this is the way we choose to live. We've been given a mission, each one of us, by God. Should we decide to accept it? Should we decide to live in faith? Should we decide to have God before us and the world out there instead of the fears and trials so close and tight before us and God someplace outside? No. It's our choice. Should we choose to accept it? It's not easy to live in hope when so many things around us just don't seem right. But this is our mission. Should we decide to accept it?